Do you think it's important to introduce concepts of gender and sexuality in the English language classroom? Why? Why not? Give us a little context to that.
Okay. Well, my answer to that question is a definitive, absolutely yes, and maybe not.
Oh.
Sounds definitive, right?
Depends.
So it all depends, right? It all depends on our context. And I may not, depending on my context, introduce the concept. It may not be a chapter that I cover in what I'm teaching. But I think as teachers, it's important for us to be thinking about how we're making space for different people in our classrooms. Mm-hmm. And it may not be very overt. It may be more subtle things. So you can be teaching little kids. You can be teaching in a context where you don't feel comfortable or not able to talk about the subject and still make space for students and their lives and their families and their lived experiences. So absolutely make space for the students, but you may or may not cover it as a topic that you talk about.
Hi, listeners. That was our guest for today, Kim, giving us a little taste of what's to come in this episode.
That's right. Today, we're zooming into LGBTQIA+ identities and how to approach concepts of gender and sexuality in our classrooms around the world. It's a tricky topic.
Definitely tricky.
Yeah, because of how varied the ways different cultures approach these ideas. There are so many layers to culture to consider.
And we want to recognize that as Americans who hold relatively liberal views, we certainly carry our own culture with us in this episode.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we hope you'll listen and reflect with us today, openly and critically. I'm ready. Are you?
Ready. Hello, and welcome to the Teacher Think Aloud podcast, a podcast for reflective practice for teachers of English around the world. I'm your co-host, Shay.
And I'm Anna.
And here's Kim.
My name is Kim Carroll. My pronouns are she and her. I am the owner and director of English for Life Academy. Right now, that means a lot of consulting in monitoring and evaluation, teaching and training, and learning experience design. And I also teach English at Presbyterian College here in South Carolina.
You may remember Kim from our Friends of the Podcast episode on AI in ELT. She had some great ideas on using Twee and Brisk for developing lesson materials.
She was so great on that episode. The reason we reached out to her in the first place was that I had seen her give a webinar on Facebook Live for teachers in South America on the topic of LGBTQIA awareness in the EL classroom. Mm-hmm. But before we get into it, we started Kim off with our signature icebreaker question.
Karaoke or trivia? Which do you prefer and why?
I like trivia because it's a team sport and I can rely on my team members for us to know all the answers collectively.
Mm. Oh, are you not the one who knows the answers?
I'm not.
neither am I.
Yeah. I personally prefer karaoke. I'm more of a lone wolf, you know, and I have a portfolio of songs to choose from, really depending on my mood. It can be It's Tricky by Run DMC or Who Will Save Your Soul by Jewel.
Quite the range. No trivia, though?
Oh, I love watching Jeopardy, but even at home alone, I get really worked up and stressed out. So that kind of energy doesn't bode well for team trivia situations.
Yeah, for me, I really just start to panic because I never know the answers. Mm. I don't like letting my teammates down, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know both you and I really love to sing.
Yes, that we do. Okay. Now, before we dive into today's topic, I do want to pause on some terminology to make sure we're all on the same page because not all of us might be familiar with these terms. So starting with the term LGBTQ+ or LGBTQIA, these acronyms stand for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, and asexual. In other words, a broad spectrum of ways people can identify according to gender and sexuality. And the plus, as in LGBTQ plus, is there to signify that not everyone's identity may be covered by one of these specific categories.
Another term you'll hear in this episode is queer, which is preferred by many as an umbrella term for people whose sexuality or gender identity don't fall within the heterosexual cisgender norm.
And there's another one, cisgender, mm-hmm. often abbreviated as just cis. Cisgender simply means that your gender matches your sex. Like, I'm a cisgender woman, meaning I'm a biologically female person who identifies as a woman, rather than someone whose gender differs from the sex they were assigned at birth. Mm-hmm. If your gender doesn't match the sex you were assigned at birth, you might identify as transgender or possibly non-binary or another variety of gender.
There really are so many expressions of gender mm-hmm. and also of sexuality, which depends on who we are attracted to. Heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, pansexual, asexual. Mm-hmm. We can't possibly get into all of it in this one episode. Mm-mm, and mm-mm. do keep in mind that terminology does shift over time. Mm-hmm. But I hope this overview kind of gives us a basis going into our conversation with Kim.
Mm-hmm. I hope so too. So now let's come back to how this relates to folding issues of gender and sexuality into English language teaching.
I guess this should be part of my introduction, but I would like to frame some of this conversation by saying that I am a cis, queer, white woman from the US, and so I can only speak from my experience. And also, I've had lots of conversations with teachers. So some of the examples and some of the ideas I have come from them and come from my conversations with teachers who are teaching in different contexts. And we all have to approach the topic in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I know that I have enormous privilege just to be able to have this conversation with you all. And so I can only tell you about my own experiences and what I know, but I've done some research. Mm-hmm. And there was a really interesting study where it was a small study, but it was a survey of teachers in the US who are all very well-meaning and into social justice and inclusion and belonging. And the question was, why do you not include this topic in your classroom if you don't? And there was a couple categories of answers that emerged. One was that they didn't feel like they would be supported by their institution or the political environment or what's mm-hmm. going on in the world right now to be able to talk about it. One was that they didn't know enough about it, so they didn't feel comfortable bringing it up. One was that they're already inclusive, like they already talk about inclusion and belonging. So mm-hmm. why do they have to talk about this specific aspect of inclusion? Mm-hmm. And the final topic that emerged was they didn't feel like it was their business. Like, I don't want to be intrusive on people's lives. It's not really my business. But if we keep it invisible, then we're not showing students that their experiences are valued. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a longer answer to the same question.
Mm. Well, and it's really interesting to hear about why teachers may not feel comfortable broaching the topic. Could you tell us maybe some other challenges that teachers may face in different contexts and with different students?
Absolutely. Context is everything, right, in our teaching. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you're going to mm-hmm. have to think about it in different ways, depending on, for example, the age of your learners. If you're teaching little kids or middle schoolers mm-hmm. or adults, mm-hmm. if you're teaching EFL or ESL in the US or, you know, where English is a foreign language, you have to think about the culture that you're teaching in. The cultures of your students. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. You have to think about what your students need to know about the topic. What is their exposure going to be? How can you present it in a way that's going to be useful for them in their lives? For example, when I'm working with students who are international students coming into a US college campus, mm-hmm. there's a shared culture that people who live in the US have about how we talk about LGBTQ, queer identities, mm-hmm. and things that might not be shared mm-hmm. by them. They have a different background. So as part of learning about the culture, I want them to know how to talk about this, how people are thinking about it, what's going on in the world and politics in South Carolina on their campus about this. When they see signs on campus, mm-hmm. I want them to know what the groups are. I want them to understand what they're going to be seeing mm-hmm. and hearing and experiencing around them. And so that's one lens that you can use mm-hmm. when working with your students. Mm-hmm. What do they need to yeah. know about it in order to be part of the culture? Or if you're in an EFL environment, talking about US mm-hmm. culture or British culture, whatever that might be.
Mm-hmm. I like that cross-cultural communication, intercultural competency lens that you're taking that, I mean, especially for students, whether they're international students at a university or adults coming in to some kind of community ESL space, you know, they might need a little bit more support to understand the context that they're in order to just be able to understand how different people are talking about these things in the context that they are living in. But in EFL, it's more of an introduction to, by the way, there's this other way of thinking that I want to introduce you to.
Yeah, I think that, you know, depending where you are and what the approach is in that place, that could be a pretty safe and acceptable way to be able to introduce LGBTQ topics or queer people and writers and lives into your classroom. But I also want to add, and when I talk with teachers from especially countries who say, oh, I can't talk about this here, or we don't have gay people here, I understand that that's what you see around you sometimes, right? You don't see any gay people because they've been silenced. They have invisible lives in a lot of ways. And so I just want to, I always remind them, yeah, I get it that you don't see queer people around you, but it's not a cultural thing. There are queer people everywhere. And no matter who you're teaching, you can imagine that you have queer people in your classroom or that they have queer family members. And if you're living in a culture where it's not talked about, it's not going to be so evident. But if you can keep in your mind that knowing the diversity of our students and we don't know all their experiences, every time you walk into a classroom, imagine that you have a queer person in your classroom or that they have a queer person in their family and proceed accordingly.
Yeah, I appreciate how you've presented it. It is, you know, giving students language to be able to engage in conversations around the queer community and its existence, but it's also, it's about raising awareness too. So it's building language and also raising awareness. And it's really important work.
Yeah. And I guess I'm curious on that note, how you might go about introducing these concepts. I mean, you've talked about the importance of introducing these concepts, but what are some strategies that you might use in order to do so in different contexts where you need to really consider the culture and the level of acceptance that's already there?
And also proficiency level, right? That's something that we would want to consider too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, good questions. Let me talk about a couple of different ways you can kind of bring it into your classroom first in general. That could be across proficiency levels. And there are the overt ways you can do it. Like June is Pride Month and it's celebrated around the world. And we're going to talk about the history of that or how that happened. Or here's a story or here's how people celebrate this. And that would be, you know, very kind of obvious way to talk about queer lives or history or gay rights or things like that. But it doesn't have to be that. You don't have to wait till June, first of all. And second, it doesn't have to be that overt. There's lots of things you can do to bring openness into your classroom. So, for example, back in the days when all of our classes were online a few years ago, I found that having my pronouns in my name, like, I have my name, Kim, or teacher Kim, or whatever I had there at that time. And I would put my pronoun, she, her, right after my name. And that was new for most of the people that I was working with in a lot of parts of the world, and they would ask about it. And so that was a nice open door. And then I used that same approach with my college students with my email signature. So I also have my pronouns in my email signature. And so that was an opening to be able to talk about that with them and that they'll see that, you know, you're going to see this with people as becoming more and more common. And this is what it means. And this is why we do it. Just having that conversation opens the door to allow other people to share their experience and to let your students know that you are aware that there are queer people and non-binary people and trans people in the world and that you're okay with it and that they might feel more comfortable to bring that experience to the classroom. So that's something very simple to talk about pronouns. And maybe you're not going to teach they, them pronoun the first class as you're teaching he, she, and it with beginners. Probably not. But at some point, you could certainly have a story or a close exercise, a fill in the blank where you have a non-binary person that we're talking about. And like, I like to use pop stars because we have so many now, and my teenage students and college students, they all know Sam Smith and Demi Lovato and all of these US pop stars who are non-binary. And so you can have a story about them and you can just show how they, them pronoun is used when talking about a single person and just let it be part of the larger class without having to have a chapter on gender and sexuality. Also, your choice of materials. So can you choose stories or songs by queer authors? There are so many, so many historically authors that are queer that we may not know, but you can do a little digging and find out. And you can just say, you know, in the introduction of the person, if you're doing a thing on Women's History Month, make sure you have a queer voice represented there, or Black History Month, or whatever it is you're talking about in your classroom. Try to represent queer voices just as part of, you know, part of humanity. And when I do Women's History Month, I usually do something about famous women and always make sure that I have someone represented there that I can say, and her wife, blah, blah, blah. And it's just part of what you're doing in the day without having to make it a big issue. There's a lot of great material that I'll share with you guys. You can share the link.
We've got your back, listeners. You can find all of the resources Kim shared in the show notes. Now back to our conversation.
Wonderful. Well, I think, Kim, you've given so many sort of easy entry points for teachers who might not feel like it's their place to incorporate issues of the queer community within their classroom. Maybe they don't identify as queer themselves and they worry that there will be some sort of misstep on their part. And so I think that just these simple things, like thinking about representation in the stories we share, in having students, you know, identify themselves, you know, through pronoun use on a Zoom class, I think that that's all pretty easy to access. And it does a lot in a little bit.
Yeah. And I also wanted to say, you know, that kind of subtle approach that gives space to these voices, I think it's a really nice way to also, in contexts where it might be a little trickier to introduce this topic, because as you said earlier, you know, they might in that society think, well, there are no gay people here, or there's just a resistance to that idea. And it's easy as the American coming into that space to feel like, oh, I really don't want to overstep. I don't want them to feel like I'm trying to impose my way of thinking about the world onto them. I think that the degree to which you stress different aspects of these introductions and this representation, of course, is going to be different in those different spaces. But I like that this opens the door, as you said.
Yeah.
Another thing that I think is really important is try to find local voices, right? Because in the end, it's the local community's context. And so if I'm going to teach in another place and I want to understand better how I can put this into my classroom without feeling preachy or doing something wrong or stepping on toes or misrepresenting, find local voices. It's not going to be easy or always possible, but even in places that are pretty conservative or this is not part of your daily topic, there's probably a community center somewhere. There are places that you can find on the internet very often and find local people and find out how do they want to be represented? What are the issues they're having? So when I was working with teachers in South America, I did a series of, I think there were 4 or 5 sessions about this topic with teachers around South America. And it was really important for me to make sure that I was just the facilitator. Truly just, here's some things I've been thinking about. Here's some things that are issues. How do you deal with this? How do you want to deal with this? Let's have a conversation about it. And for each session, I had a storyteller, a local person, who could tell a story about their experience as a queer student or a queer teacher or an ally. And this was multi-country range, so it wasn't like they're all from the same city, but for each session, that was the center of the workshop, was this person could tell their story, and then we could respond and troubleshoot and support and give ideas. And so that took me out of the center of the conversation, because all of these cool ideas that I'm sharing with you don't work in every situation, and we really have to be aware that we all are going to handle this differently.
When in doubt, go local.
So good. I mean, that's just good advice in general when entering a context where we're outsiders, right?
Yeah. Especially for us Americans and teachers from countries where queer issues are more openly discussed. Uh-huh. It's easy to impose our own way of thinking and mm-hmm. to approach LGBTQIA representation and inclusion through our own lens mm-hmm. without fully understanding the delicate balance often at play.
Yeah,
I know that when I lived in Armenia, it was definitely a challenge, and I wish I had tapped into the feminist group I met in Yerevan to help me navigate it more. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I tried introducing queer issues into the courses I was teaching, but I always approached it in a very delicate way, inquiring yeah. more about student perspectives and sharing my own only if asked. More mm-hmm. as a cultural exchange.
Mm-hmm. And that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Some places and people are more open to the conversation than others. So it is important to be mindful and respectful while also not simply abandoning this idea of queer inclusion. Mm-hmm. Kim had a really nice personal example about why it's so important to create an inclusive environment.
It was last year, about this time, I had the opportunity to do a language Portuguese immersion course in Brazil. Oh, and so I was a beginner language learner. Yeah, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was super fun. You know, it's always fun as a language teacher to put yourself back in the student's shoes. Yes. Well, one, because we love language, but two, it's like I'm learning the language, but I also have this other part of my brain that's mm-hmm. thinking about the process that's mm-hmm. happening and the teaching and all of that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you both have had that experience
oh,
before.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So there I was, a beginner language learner in Portuguese class in Brazil. And what do you learn in the beginner language class? You learn family names mm-hmm. and you learn all the words and then you put it together in sentences and then you talk to your classmates about your family. And I'm fairly mm-hmm. comfortable saying my girlfriend, we've been together 10 years, you know, it's fine, mm-hmm. but you're a beginner, you don't know your class, you don't know your teacher, and here you are, have to introduce yourself. And so mm-hmm. my brain is going, okay, if I say I have a girlfriend, probably my teacher's going to correct me and say, no, you mean boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we do as language. We want to make sure people are using the right yeah. words and correct them. And then, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to have to say, no, I mean girlfriend. And now is the thing. Right? So anyway, I'm exaggerating all of this in my head, but okay. So I say, oh, I have a girlfriend, and I immediately say, and her name is Veronica. So my teacher doesn't think that I made a mistake because mm-hmm. he can mm-hmm. identify that it's a woman's name. Okay. And then mm-hmm. I say, and she's from Brazil. Now I have to deflect mm-hmm. the conversation just in case the teacher was going to be uncomfortable. Right. And all of this mm-hmm. is going on in my head almost subconsciously. Right. But in reflection, I'm thinking, mm-hmm. wow, all the hedging I did just to introduce yeah. myself.
Panic mode.
And I'm comfortable yeah. with this. And how mm-hmm. much energy is this taking away from our students' language learning? If mm-hmm. they don't know uh-huh. if they can say who their right. partner is. And mm-hmm. for the teachers that are saying, well, it's not important in beginner classes. If you're asking their students to share their lives, it's important mm-hmm. that they know that when they say, I have a wife and I'm a woman, or, you know, whatever it is, or I live with my sister and her wife, when I say that, mm-hmm. it's going to be supported. If there are comments mm-hmm. from classmates, the teacher's going to shut it down or mm-hmm. find a way to make sure that my experience is included in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And so even if we don't talk about it with beginner students, mm-hmm. it's important that we know that they have the space to be themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what an intense experience that must have been for you in being so comfortable in sharing who you are and who your partner is. And just thinking about students who don't have that mm-hmm. level of comfort, right? What mm-hmm. that must feel like for them. And so this mm-hmm. is, you know, a message to all of our teachers listening. Don't make assumptions that your student yeah. is using the wrong word for their partner. Like, allow that mm-hmm. student time to continue describing mm-hmm. or, you know, allow it to just be that and don't feel like you need to probe and push.
Yeah, I have kind of two things out of that. One is mm-hmm. I just love how mm-hmm. meta your brain went and you were analyzing yeah. the teacher aspect of that yeah. while you're like fretting about the student side of that. But mm-hmm. also I just right. want to ask as a follow-up, what did your teacher say in response mm. to that? Were they just like, okay, and moved on to the next person? Or was there any kind mm-hmm. of reaction? Or did you see some kind of just moment pause of processing? Or was it just like, okay, great. Did you get the sense that that was something that they were completely comfortable with in that moment?
Well, yeah, the funny end to the story, my teacher, who was male, he introduced himself and he said, "And my name is so-and-so, and I live with my boyfriend, and we live in such and such neighborhood." And so it turns out my teacher was also queer and was comfortable saying that in the classroom.
Amazing.
So that's two different things, right? So I was in a cultural space where it was fine for the teacher to say that to the students as well. I don't know if he would have shared that or not if I had not introduced myself that way first. We'll never know. Probably, but not necessarily. But the fact that he responded in turn by saying, like, "I see you and I'm the same" in some ways was interesting. The whole thing turned out as not a thing at all. Everybody introduced themselves, done. The teacher introduced himself and we moved on to the next thing. It was the perfect experience, as experiences go, when you say something like that and everyone's like, "Okay, cool, no big deal." That doesn't always happen, of course, right? And so as teachers, we have to think about how we want to respond if that doesn't go that way. And so I think that's part of the classroom culture that we have to think about creating, even if we never talk about the topic in our class. I think we also have to think about how we want to respond if students are making derogatory comments or bullying or even unintentional things, like, you know, little kids in the U.S. and teenagers, like, to use the word gay. "Oh, that's so gay." I mean, when I was a kid, that's what people said anyway. Like, "That's stupid," or "That's dumb," or whatever. And you could, as a teacher, say, "Well, they don't know what they're saying, and I'm just going to ignore it." Or you could choose to say, "Hey, if you want to say something is stupid or dumb, then use that word. Because gay means something else." And it might be a teaching moment. Like, "Do you know what that means? It means this. It doesn't mean what you want to say. So let's be more precise with our language." So you could show your allyship or show that you're not going to allow those sorts of things to happen in your class to your students in those little moments. And I think that's also an important piece of being an ally. So if you have students in your class who are queer but you don't know it, if you don't shut those things down, they're getting a message.
Absolutely.
Right? Yes. That you're not a safe person to tell, and this is not a safe place to talk about those experiences in your life.
It's always those really, you know, kind of subtle ways of building relationships and responding to commentary or like giggling or whatever it is, the way that you respond to someone is so, so important.
I like this idea of sharing with students, you know, the importance of precision with language, right? If we're language teachers and, you know, we take a moment, we pause and we say, "Don't say that something is gay. Let's think about other adjectives to describe what you're actually trying to say." And that's another example of just a seemingly little interaction that can really have a large and lasting impact.
I love that story. It really takes us into the student experience of how nervous you might be if you weren't sure if your teacher will be accepting and inclusive if you identify as queer.
Yeah. You never know who's sitting in your class, right? Now, coming back to how we integrate these discussions into teacher training.
Is there anything else you wanted to mention about introducing queer and gender issues in teacher training, doing so in a respectful way, while also standing up for the LGBTQIA plus population?
I think that in pre-service teacher training, you know, when we're in college and learning all the basic stuff, that curriculum is so full, it's really hard to add another topic to it. I've run TESOL certificate trainings, which are roughly 150 hours of training, which is definitely not enough training to be a language teacher. And how do you put it in there, right? So when I've done short trainings like that, it's often a strand or a thread. So I think we had one on teacher identity, and you could choose what you wanted to talk about. Did you want to talk about being a teacher of color? Did you want to talk about non-native speakerism? Did you want to think about LGBTQ plus identity? So within and among the class, it was a kind of a jigsaw type of way to cover a variety of different topics and allow people the opportunity to explore one of those a little bit more in depth. I think this is a great topic for professional development. And a lot of it, from what I see, is, as we've said, people, they're not afraid to talk about it, but think they don't know enough, or that it's not really something that they can speak to, or don't really understand the issues. And so a short professional development training followed by a community of practice followed by some group reflection. It might be working with other teachers in your school, your community, or maybe it's a global group that you can just have some time together every couple of months or something and talk about these issues and how you're reacting to them and how they're surfacing in your classroom and troubleshooting and problem solving and sharing resources. I think this is a great topic that lends itself well to that sort of teacher engagement. Like, let's just work together and let's learn how we're each dealing with it in our own context and share the ways that we can be more inclusive and more understanding of our students' contexts and perspectives.
Yeah, always still framing it as that kind of inclusive education. It doesn't have to be like that. We're just talking about this one specific topic. It is part of a bigger aspect of teaching, which is inclusivity in your classroom. Yeah. Shay?
Oh, I'm just thinking, I mean, like, this is an area that I think that I could use a lot of work, you know? Mm. So when you talk about, you know, taking a workshop and then joining a COP, I'm like, that sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. I need to do that. Because, you know, when I mention teachers who might be nervous, I'm that nervous teacher that feels like I'm going to screw up, man.
Yeah,
like,
I
don't want to put my foot in my mouth. You know, I appreciate that you've said you can take this as your goal for professional development for a time, and there are resources out there. So I hope that you'll be able to share with us, Kim, some resources that teachers can use to really just gain a better understanding.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think I feel the same way and I'm getting better. But when I'm discussing topics like racial justice issues, right, I've definitely felt the same way, thinking, well, who wants to hear from the white lady about social justice issues? And then I realized that I can do simple things to learn more about it. I can follow some thought leaders on Instagram, and I can watch some TED Talks, and I can read some books, and I can talk to my friends who have these experiences and ask them, hey, this might be a weird topic to talk about, but I've been reading this book and I want to understand a little bit more about your experience as a Black teacher or teaching in Asia or whatever it might be. Like, that's how I think for me, I've been able to get over that kind of nervousness or feeling like, oh, it's really not for me to talk about. I'll share another story, if you don't mind, real quick. So a lot of the teachers that I've worked with and heard their stories from by doing these workshops are queer teachers, because that's who's attracted to this topic in general. Like, I want to know more about how to understand this and how to work with my students and support them.
Yeah.
And there's a teacher I have in mind, maybe they're listening, who is a non-binary teacher in Latin America. And at the beginning, I asked everyone who was taking the workshop, what concerns do you have? What do you want to talk about? Like, let's do a needs assessment and figure out where we're going to go with these workshops. And they expressed that they were non-binary and were terrified, their words, not mine, that they would lose their job if people found out. Because, you know, if parents found out and pulled their kids out of the school because the teacher was non-binary, and then they would lose their job because how could a school function without students, right? So that was at the beginning. And then I've also heard stories of other teachers who had students in their class debating, is homosexuality okay? Like, it's a debate and the teacher is not out to their class, but having to sit and listen and just horribly uncomfortable. Like, what do I do? So I would say, all of you teachers out there that don't feel a personal threat or sense of your own personal safety, that don't have to deal with that, don't feel afraid and just, you know, step your foot in into this arena. And it's really allyship that can help in this situation. Because if a teacher who really wants to talk about it but can't because they're afraid they're going to lose their job, can't talk about it, then maybe if everyone is talking about it, people who aren't going to have to lose their job if they bring it up, then it's going to open more space for teachers to be able to be themselves in the classroom as well.
Allyship. That's so central to so many of the challenges that different populations face in different ways. So yeah, having allies who normalize something that can feel like, oh, I'm an outsider, making them feel welcome is just so important. And I love that. Yeah, we are all working on becoming better allies always.
Yeah. And recognizing, I think, the usefulness of, you know, a position of privilege that some of us have, but it's recognizing that
that exact position of privilege is useful when performing duties of an ally in whatever arena it may be.
Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's a university professor, and we were talking about this issue, and she said something that really stuck with me. And since it's the next day, I'll share it with you. She's a white teacher and does a lot with racial justice and things. And she said, "My pedagogy is my protest."
Mm. Yes.
Like, you know, we don't need to wave rainbow flags, but we can include queer authors and Black authors. We can include voices of people that represent who our students are as well.
Yes.
You know, make sure that there's representation, and that can be your protest.
Such a perfect takeaway for today. My pedagogy is my protest.
Really not much for us to add here. Kim covered so much. Amazing.
So teachers, we want to hear from you. How are LGBTQIA plus issues handled in your context? How have you been an ally to the queer community and created a welcoming atmosphere for students of all identities?
You can share with us in a comment on social media or email us at teacherthinkaloud@gmail.com. We welcome your questions, reflections, and ideas.
And don't forget to like this episode, comment, and or subscribe.
Yeah.
We want you to be a part of our community of practice. As always, friends, thanks for joining us on the Teacher Think Aloud podcast. And until next time, happy teaching.
And happy reflecting.